Willoughby Hills, Ohio, a leafy and normally quiet suburb of Cleveland. That is until the 16th of November 2012, when police received a 911 call at 1:15 a.m. from a young girl asking for help, hysterically telling dispatchers that her mother was being stabbed. Police arrived at the scene, entered the home, and were pointed in the direction of the master bedroom. They find a horrific scene. The bedroom was awash with fresh blood, the bedsheets completely transformed into a sea of scarlet red, so much so it was impossible to tell what their original colors had been. Disguised beneath all this blood, the body of a woman, and standing over that body, a young girl covered in blood, knife in hand, looking surprisingly calm, almost peaceful. This is a case that shook all of those involved, including the police investigators who had to use all of their experience and patience to get to the bottom of it. Fair warning, this case is gruesome in its details. Welcome to the Beyond Evil podcast, where we discuss and dissect the most mysterious, terrifying, and mind-bending cases from all over the world. Before we start, we would like to send out our condolences to the friends and family of Lisa Knafel, whose life was ended so prematurely by selfish deeds motivated by greed and delusion. This case is so bizarre, so strange, that you might have a hard time believing the outcome. A family is torn to pieces, children left without a mother, all because of the actions of two people. This is a case of false promises, seduction, and love. Sabrina Zunich began life in a chaotic environment. Her parents, who called her Bree for short, were both addicted to drugs and alcohol, eventually leading her to be taken away by social services. Sabrina's life became a sad tale. Like so many children who are neglected by bad parents, she was unable to find a stable home. For many years, she would be passed from pillar to post. Foster home after foster home would take her in, and then she would be moved on. It can't be understated how much of a negative impact this can have on a child growing up. All Sabrina longed for was a family of her own and a place to call home. Sabrina's mother had died from her various addictions. Her father and grandmother assumed the parenting duties, but her father, also an addict, spent most of his time stealing from Sabrina's grandmother to feed his addiction. Eventually, he too died of a drug overdose, leaving Sabrina with a grandmother who, honestly, was too old to take care of her and no parents. Fortunately for Sabrina, her luck was about to change when she was placed in the care of Kevin and Lisa Knafel, a good couple with a steady relationship and a nice home. Lisa had a daughter from a previous marriage named Megan, and the couple also had a daughter together named Haley. People who knew them said they were the perfect couple, and many remarked on Lisa's heart of gold and beautiful, caring personality. Lisa, ironically, was a social worker herself. She worked with children who had been victims of sexual abuse, while Kevin was a truck driver who spent quite a lot of time away from home working. The couple both loved children and hated the thought of anyone inflicting harm on them, so they both decided to apply to get a license to foster children who needed a good home. In June of 2011, they fostered 16-year-old Sabrina Zunich. By the time Sabrina was fostered by the Knafels, to be blunt, her life was a mess. She had already started following in the footsteps of her parents, taking drugs and drinking. This was another reason her grandmother had her put into care. Sabrina had also started stealing from her to fund her next fix. No elderly person would have the strength to put up with this kind of behavior in their later years, so we must not judge her too harshly for putting her granddaughter into care. It isn't surprising that Sabrina had taken that path, though. After all, her upbringing was neglectful, traumatic, and really anything but stable. Thankfully, she now found a home with two foster parents who genuinely cared and wanted the best for her. This clearly had an impact on Sabrina. Her whole life turned around. She got on very well with Megan and Haley and thought of them as her sisters. She kicked her drug habit and even started doing well at school. That is, until Lisa started to notice some different behavioral patterns from Sabrina. Lisa, though, being the tolerant, caring person that she was, put it down to Sabrina's difficult upbringing. Surely it was also just a phase that she was going through. After all, a vast majority of teenagers go through a rebellious phase at some point. But this wasn't just a teenager rebelling against authority. she was brazenly flirting with her foster father, Kevin, right in front of Lisa. And if that wasn't strange enough, she had begun to act as if she was Haley's mother, almost as if she was trying to take over from Lisa in all aspects of their lives. But what could have been fueling this change in behavior? The bad behavior continued and showed no signs of letting up. Lisa was at her wit's end. Despite her trying her best to persevere with Sabrina, it was putting a significant strain on their relationship. Lisa also wasn't being helped by her husband, Kevin, who spent a lot of time away from home driving his truck. On November 16, 2012, Kevin was out at work again. At around 1:15 a.m., Megan, who was 13 at the time, was awoken by the sound of raised voices screaming at each other. Megan later testified that she was terrified. She said, "I heard voices shouting very loudly. I was scared. Each step I took out of my bedroom made my heart beat faster and faster. As I walked into my mom's bedroom, it was Bree on top of her, stabbing her with a knife over and over again. I jumped on Bree to try to stop her, but I wasn't strong enough, and she threw me into a wall." Megan, unable to intervene physically, did the next best thing and probably the most sensible thing. She ran to the next room, picked up the phone, and called 911. The police were very efficient, arriving quickly. As they approached the house, a young girl with a dog came running outside. Officers didn't know what was really happening at this point, so it's fair to cut them a little bit of slack. But not knowing who was running at them with a dog, they pointed their weapons at Megan, who had been clearly traumatized enough by this point. Quickly realizing their mistake, the officers listened to Megan as she directed them into the master bedroom. Officers swiftly but cautiously made their way into the house, up the stairs, and down the hall, weapons drawn. They took a left turn into the bedroom and they got their first glimpse of this horrific scene. But it was only a glimpse. Without warning, Sabrina acted very serene at first, looking at the body of her foster mother. She then quickly turned and charged at officers with that knife in hand. She's very lucky they didn't just shoot her, but the officers acted extremely calmly and professionally, dodging Sabrina's lunge and telling her to drop the knife. There was a brief standoff, but Sabrina eventually did drop the knife and then laid on the floor with her arms outstretched. The officers retrieved the weapon and handcuffed the young woman. She was covered from head to toe in blood, so much so that when the officers stood her up, she left a body imprint on the floor where she had been laying. Next, the officers had to enter the bedroom and survey the scene. Police officers have to deal with all kinds of situations, many of them not very nice, but this scene shocked even them. This was no argument that had gotten out of hand. The lifeless corpse of Lisa Knafel was sprawled across the blood-soaked covers, so much blood that the officers found it difficult to determine where Lisa's body began and ended. The floor and walls were covered in her blood, which had been splattered far and wide as the result of a knife being plunged into her body. In the dark, eerie silence of the bedroom, they heard a small whimper come from a wardrobe. Upon opening the door, they found 3-year-old Haley crying uncontrollably. This innocent little girl had witnessed the entire attack. After the initial shock had passed, the investigation, of course, commenced. Law enforcement had a lot of questions they needed answering. What had provoked this savage attack? Why would a teenager suddenly turn on a woman who had given her everything she had always wanted, a stable family home? These two questions were just the tip of a very large iceberg. Initially, of course, the investigation began with the body. Lisa had been stabbed a staggering 178 times. Barely any part of her body was left unharmed. It was clear that Lisa had put up a fight. Her hands had been cut to pieces as she tried to block the knife in a desperate attempt to save herself. The way the knife had been used also told a story. As it was being thrust into Lisa's body, the knife was being twisted by Sabrina. This is a technique that soldiers are taught if they ever have to use their bayonets. The purpose is to disable the enemy as fast as possible by severing veins and arteries. Sabrina had used the knife in this way so repeatedly that the knife had bent. Even bones had been shattered during the attack. Officers and investigators alike both agreed they had never seen a knife used with such ferocity before. Sabrina is taken to a local hospital to be treated for self-inflicted wounds that she had sustained whilst attacking her. While there, she is questioned by police, but simply tells them that she can't remember anything about the incident. Soon, she is released from the hospital and taken into custody. There was never any question of bail. The evidence was irrefutable. The police naturally contacted Kevin Knafel to come home immediately. Megan and Haley needed someone to take care of them, and his wife had just been murdered in cold blood. Investigators had a mammoth task before them. There didn't seem to be any motive for the attack. Friends and family of Lisa and Kevin just couldn't believe what had happened. They all spoke of this wonderful couple who not only loved and adored their own children, but also had selflessly offered their home and lives to other children like Sabrina who needed help. Well, when we say all friends and family, that isn't quite true. There was one friend of Lisa's, Carol Beese, who had suspicions of Kevin. She wasn't accusing him of murder. After all, he was away driving his truck, and no one could deny that Sabrina was the perpetrator. But she did think that he may have known more than he was letting on. Her suspicions were aroused at the funeral for Lisa. She noticed Kevin was the only one who wasn't crying and didn't look overly upset. Carol Beese said, "The first time I thought there was something wrong was when I attended the service and wake. There was a lot of emotion and tears from friends and family and co-workers, but Kevin was the only one there who didn't look very upset." When the police are left in a situation like this, they have to find a motive where there appears to be none. That meant checking up on the people closest to Lisa, and there was only one place to start, her husband, Kevin. Police obtained a warrant so they could go through Kevin's phone and find out who he had been talking to and what they had been talking about. It didn't take long before something looked very odd. In a one-month period, Kevin had sent no fewer than 1,500 text messages to Sabrina, while in comparison, he had only texted his wife 200 times. Kevin, obviously aware by this point that police suspected he may have had some involvement, called in the lawyers, a wise thing to do, as simultaneously, the police called Kevin back in for further questioning. But what about Sabrina? Well, she had sat in custody for 6 months by this point and hadn't spoken a single word about the murder. But that was about to change. Sabrina's lawyer advised her to use a protocol within the U.S. justice system known as proffer. Proffer is a process where the chief prosecutor meets with someone accused of a crime alongside their lawyers. If the prosecutors agree to this, the whole conversation is considered officially off the record, meaning that no new details they gain can be used against the defendant in court. The prosecution had little to lose by allowing Sabrina to use proffer. There was no doubt that she had committed the murder, and she intended to plead guilty. So they had all the evidence they needed for a conviction. But from their point of view, could an off-the-record conversation provide more clarification around motive and if anyone else had been involved? Sabrina was about to blow the case wide open. She had a lot to say for herself. During the conversation, she told prosecutors that she had been in a relationship with Kevin behind Lisa's back for months before the murder. Kevin had begun by asking for massages from Sabrina to his upper legs and inner thighs, claiming to be in pain from sitting in the cab of a truck for long periods of time. Soon after, this progressed into a sexual relationship. Prosecutors were also told that Kevin promised to protect Bree if she killed Lisa, using her $750,000 life insurance policy. Sabrina had said that she was told she would probably have to go to prison for 2 to 3 years, but as soon as she came out, Kevin and her would live happily ever after, presumably bringing Megan and Haley up as a couple, effectively replacing Lisa with Sabrina. Kevin also told her that they would go and buy a new big house together, even acquiring a foster license for Sabrina so she could bring other children into the home as well. Sabrina, of course, was a very damaged young woman, so that may explain how she fell for the lies. But was Kevin just using her as a pawn in a game? Or was he so deluded that he believed the rubbish coming out of his own mouth? Nothing can excuse the actions of Sabrina. She was, by definition, a murderer. But as we mentioned earlier, because of her bad parents and difficult upbringing, she craved a stable home, a family, all the things that she never had. She was extremely vulnerable and easy to manipulate, genuinely believing that after a short stint in jail, she would come out to a brand new life and a family of her own. Before Kevin fell under suspicion, he only made the effort to visit her in custody once. He became very aggressive to the desk sergeant when he was told he wasn't allowed to see her. While Sabrina was rotting in a jail cell, Kevin didn't seem to be very worried about her welfare. He made the claim for Lisa's life insurance policy shortly after Sabrina was locked up, and because there weren't any criminal proceedings against him, he was paid the $750,000. Did he use this money to protect Sabrina as he had promised? Maybe hire a top attorney for her? Not a chance. He started spending money like a drunken sailor. He bought an RV and various high-end cars. Completely by accident, Kevin had done a huge favor to law enforcement with his actions. Sabrina may have been damaged and easily manipulated, but she wasn't stupid. It may have taken 6 months, but she could see that Kevin had lied to her. He wasn't protecting her in any way. He wasn't even sending a few dollars into prison for her to spend inside. He had completely abandoned her now that he had gotten what he wanted, Lisa's money. He could have been smart. He may have maintained contact with her, given her some money, and kept making the false promises of the past. If this had continued, Sabrina would have continued to cling on to the pipe dream of living out the fairy tale family life with Kevin that he had previously told her, giving her no reason to speak to prosecutors. But now, she was giving the police everything they wanted. After all, it was the only way of getting her own back on Kevin, who had just become another adult in her troubled life to betray her. Her conversation, under proffer, pointed the cold finger of blame in one direction, straight at Kevin Knievel. Kevin's trial began in June of 2014. Sabrina was now 19 years old. Her testimony was damning. She told the whole story of how Kevin had manipulated her and how he told her that Lisa was worth more dead than alive. All of the details, including the intimate messages and sexual relationship, were laid bare in front of the whole courtroom. Something new also came to light about Lisa. Sabrina said that Lisa wanted her out of the home because of her deteriorating behavior. She said she was told that she was too much of a disruptive influence, as well as Lisa's correct suspicions that Kevin was sleeping with her. Sabrina said in court, "After he told me about the life insurance and said that Lisa was worth more dead than alive, he then started talking openly about killing Lisa and how he would do it. He suggested stabbing her with a large blade." Sabrina was asked why she stabbed Lisa and why she thought it was a good idea. She simply said, "I was doing what I was told to do." Kevin, of course, denied all the allegations made against him by Sabrina, and the whole court case became a shameful game of he said, she said. Kevin's defense lawyers were confident that he would get off the charges. It seemed all prosecutors had was the testimony of a murderer, someone who could be easily accused of saying absolutely anything and blaming anyone to try to get some mitigation to the crime they had committed. That is, until the prosecution pulled an ace from their sleeve, their star witness, a girl named Autumn, who was a friend of Sabrina's. Autumn said that she had had a conversation over the phone with Sabrina one evening when she was asked if she could find a hitman. Autumn not only spoke to Sabrina, but she testified that Kevin was in the background participating in the conversation as well. Kevin, she alleged, offered to take her on drug runs in his car as long as she asked around to see if anyone would be willing to kill Lisa for him. Although Kevin didn't know it at the time, Autumn had gone to speak with the police as soon as she saw that Lisa had been murdered, and she told them everything. Not only did she agree to testify in court, but she also agreed to engage Kevin in a conversation while wearing a wire. Unfortunately, despite her best efforts, when she spoke to Kevin over the phone, he deflected and denied any knowledge of the conversations around hiring a hitman. Maybe he wasn't quite as stupid as it seemed. Nevertheless, the prosecution did play the recording of the wiretap conversation in court. Although Kevin admitted nothing, he also didn't fully deny the conversations had happened, stating, in some instances, that he didn't remember all of the conversation and that Sabrina had talked big about a lot of things. Now it was down to a jury to consider all of the conflicting evidence that had been brought before them. Was Kevin a dangerous manipulator who had preyed on a young, vulnerable girl? Or was he the victim of slanderous lies by a murderer trying to get off? The jury adjourned for 2 days, 9.5 hours before coming to a verdict. Kevin was found guilty of 11 charges, 6 of which involved sexual battery and sexual acts with a minor, the other 5 referring to his contribution in the murder of Lisa Knafel. He was given a life sentence with the possibility of parole in 30 years. He was also given an additional 12 years for the sexual offenses. He was 42 years old when sentenced, so it is possible that he will never be a free man again. Despite Sabrina eventually cooperating with law enforcement and her defense's argument that she was also a victim of Kevin's manipulation, she too was given a life sentence with the possibility of parole in 30 years when she is 49 years old. Amazingly, and in a show of perhaps undeserved compassion, some friends of Lisa's have defended Sabrina since the trial. Many believe that she herself was a victim, someone who had never experienced real love in her life, and someone who had never had a family or a stable home. One friend said, "I believe Sabrina is a victim. She was very vulnerable and confused. The superficial love that Kevin had shown her convinced her that she could have a life and a family of her own. Her troubled life is responsible for that, and so is Kevin for taking advantage of her." We cannot underestimate Kevin's involvement here. He was granted, along with Lisa, a license to foster vulnerable children who were in need of help, love, stability, and guidance. They were both in a position of trust, but Kevin not only betrayed the trust that was placed in him, he used that position to make a young girl commit murder and participate in sexual acts with him. He was nothing more than an opportunist predator who deserves the punishment he was handed by the courts. But we cannot and must not forget who is at the core of this case, Lisa Knafel. At just 41 years old, her life was brutally taken away by the actions of Sabrina Zunich and by extension, Kevin Knafel. Sabrina was a young girl who Lisa had taken into her heart because of her caring and compassionate nature. It was perhaps her willingness to trust and love people that left her vulnerable to the horrific fate that she suffered. Lisa believed that people were basically good underneath, and all they needed was some tender, loving care to help them succeed in life. We also can't forget the 2 girls involved in this case, Lisa's daughters, Megan and Haley. These 2 innocent girls will never see their mother again. They both witnessed a horrific attack unleashed upon their mother by Sabrina and even tried to stop it. Megan, who is now an adult, still lives in Ohio where she works as a nanny and has earned herself a degree in criminal justice from the Eastern Gateway Community College. Amazingly, Megan is still close with her father and shares pictures of them together on social media. She did, however, file a civil lawsuit against him for fraud, unjust enrichment, and wrongful payment demanding $75,000 in compensation. We do not know if that money was ever paid. Haley is still a minor, so her whereabouts remain a secret. What we can tell you for certain is that she is in a good home. She is loved and well taken care of. We must pray that Megan and Haley can both lead productive lives despite their horrific experiences. After all, they are their mother's daughter. Perhaps it is possible that the caring, loving personality of Lisa still lives on inside of them, and as they get older and wiser, going through life as best they can, they will smile. We hope that they will live in the memory of their mother's unconditional love. Rest in peace, Lisa Knafel. If you found this story compelling, don't forget to like the video, comment down below with your take on it, and please subscribe to the channel. On your way out, don't forget to hit the notification bell in order to stay up to date each time we reveal a new, shocking case. Until next time, stay safe and keep your eyes peeled. You never know what's lurking in the shadows.